Carol.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
Good.
Have you totally healed, or are you still convalescing?
I'm pretty much good. Yeah. I don't know why my thing is so dark. I tried outside, I couldn't see anything.
You know, I came outside. Hopefully, it depends which side of the table I sit on, whether there's a glare. So I'm hoping right now it's okay. So
Yeah, I can see you fine. It just, I don't know why my screen is so dark.
It's not dark. You don't look dark at all.
I don't, but it's funny because you do. And when I was outside, I couldn't see anything.
Huh. It's a little flary in here when people fill in, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think it's less, fewer people since she moved it till 9?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, nobody comes anymore.
Right.
And yet, obviously, there was a vote.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who counted it. I prefer 10, but, I mean, we took a walk at 7:30. I came back, I jumped in the shower.
I was still asleep.
I wish I was. We try and walk every morning.
Oh, that's
And since
great.
It's supposed to be so hot later on, we figured we better go out real early. That's not my preferred time. I prefer 9 o'clock.
I haven't gotten out very much. Finally, yesterday I did because it was such a beautiful day.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Meryl.
Good morning. Sorry, I couldn't find my unmute.
Good morning.
I know. I'm always like looking.
Yeah. I know. Me too. It depends. Like, are you on your iPad? Are you on your laptop?
Yeah.
What is it?
I can only do. I have an old laptop, and it. I didn't have. I could hear, but people couldn't hear me. So it turned out I can only use my iPad.
Yeah, I don't have a camera on my computer because it's old.
Right.
And you can't buy one. When the pandemic started, we tried. There are
none
to get it for any amount of money. So I just do it on my iPad.
I know. I'm going to have to be on like a 2 or 3 day trial, and it's going to all be on my iPad. And it's going to be, I also tried to get a camera or something to work, and nothing's available.
No.
For the computer.
Yeah.
They are now. They weren't in, March, April, and May. You can find some now.
Oh, you can?
Michael just looked, and he couldn't find them.
Really?
I'll tell him to go look again.
They're not easy, and they're overpriced.
Yeah.
But you can find
them. Isn't everything overpriced?
It is. Anything you want disappears, and then it comes back more expensive.
Right.
So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. Try a few different websites. I mean, there's Amazon if you shop on Amazon. There's usually stuff. Best Buy, you can check with Best Buy. You can check some other, equipment companies. I don't know. My music stuff, I use, Musician's Friend and Sweetwater. They're both online. I don't know if they do cameras.
My son-in-law got one, but actually he called Best Buy, but he called a bunch of different ones, and he finally found one that had it, and he went over and got it.
Because I went into the rest in Best Buy, and they had nothing. I mean, it was totally emptied out.
Go online, you may be able to find a little bit easier. Mm. You have a larger search.
Yeah, I did look. They also recommended the Logitech brand. They said that was a good one, so I was looking for those. And anything that was rated high, they were out of.
Yeah. John and I both have the Microsoft Life Cam. Mm. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard to use the iPad. For work, you have to scan through it. You can't get a A view of it, though I use it when I've been doing the challah baking, because at least I can sort of like set it up and leave it there and my keyboard isn't anywhere nearby.
I have a question, Kanta. When you bake your challah, do you use regular flour or bread flour?
I use regular flour.
Okay. We're able to get yeast, so I think we're going to try it.
It was
I have a lot of yeast. If anybody needs, let me know. I've got like over a pound of yeast.
Wow.
Oh God.
I'm happy to give away small bags of yeast if anybody needs.
We ordered it from Amazon. It was crazy. It was like $36 for two jars or something. That was a while ago, but.
They want $25 for hand soap.
What?
Like a small thing.
Two jars. I had a jar. I bought another two jars like early on because I found them like at Wegmans. They were still like on the shelf or Sprouts or something. But when we were away at the end of July and we were just doing day trips around, and I don't know, there was some farm stand we stopped in near Purcellville, like just some little place. And there they had like 2 pound bags and 1 pound bags of yeast. And the 1 pound bag was like $8. The 2 pound bag, which was like really, that was excessive. So I didn't get that. That was only like $14. I should have bought them out, resold it.
Yeah.
Give all the money to NVHC and Black Lives Matter. That's what we should have done. Oh my. Everybody okay this morning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made it. Last week I forgot. I meant to be here.
Well, you know, Kavanah is an important part. Our intention, the way we orient ourselves, is an important part of, it's not like just, it was good intention, but like part of just our attentiveness, our giving it, that's why we're here, right? It's how we give our attention to ourselves, to our lives, to the circumstances we're in, to the ways and people around us, and at this time of year, like it's about how are we what kind of intention and attention are we cultivating as we prepare our souls and ourselves for the holidays.
And it's embarrassing that attention to the day of the week is kind of difficult.
Oh, sorry, was that?
Attention to the day of the week is kind of difficult sometimes.
Right, so it's taking us even more energy, right, to figure out like how we can do this, right? We don't have a calendar or we don't have the schedule. It's not we have a calendar, we have calendars. We don't have like that schedule that lets us move out of the same space to be attentive to like have a sense of time. But that's also I think that's also the opportunity, right?
Yeah.
It brings an opportunity for us to pay attention differently. I was thinking about getting ready for the High Holy Days, and for everybody it is very different this year, and very much including me. I was noticing, especially last night, how there's so much new that I have to give attention to, so that it has shifted me out of sort of my, I don't want to say normal, but my ability to pay attention more inward, because there's so much pulling at my attention outward. So like this work you need to know, like this work for me is as important. It's not just like this is not just an outward work and experience that I am blessed to share with you, but it's as much for me too. And it could be easy to think that I'm immersed in the High Holidays, but it's hard. I'm not necessarily immersed in my work, my own inner work of the holidays. I'm immersed in like all the millions of details of everything that we're doing, which is actually easier to it's easier to excuse if I wanted to like say, well, I'm doing so much, but that doesn't change that I still have to do the inner work of the holidays and the prep and the planning, and there's inner prep and outer prep, right? We can go on we can go on a spur of the moment vacation and take in what we take in, and it's a great trip. And we could go to, we could plan a vacation, and we could plan out every minute of the vacation, and we could do lots of reading, and we could, you know, stick to the agenda we create, a little bit like when we travel in group, when you travel in a group, right? There's, but all the preparation, like how much you read about a place, the novels, the books, the maps, like that gives you a different perspective when you go on the vacation, right? It allows you to experience it differently. And then there's the flexibility of, or the attentiveness of being in the moment, because it's not about flexibility. If you're on a really planned trip, when I've led group trips and congregational trips, like on the one hand, it has to be really planned. On the other hand, we have to be paying attention enough to know when we have to shift something for a whole variety of reasons. When we have to, so it's an attentiveness. It's not just the flexibility is the result of attentiveness. And our High Holy Day journeys embody all of that. We can show up on Rosh Hashanah and we can have a fine experience, and that's the experience we'll have just showing up. We can get ourselves ready and do all kinds of things to prepare and read in advance and think and practice and meditate and journal and pray and like any variety of those things. And that will change the experience when we get to those days, right? And we have to be attentive even in the moment to notice what's going on inside of us that we might not have expected or anticipated, and what potentially could happen, whether we were in our building or sitting in front of a camera. That being able to pay attention and respond to that will also change the experience. So that's all the things that I'm thinking about. Well, some of the things I'm thinking about this week. I've read for you from this book before, Wild Chickens and Petty Tyrants, Metaphors for Mindfulness. And this one struck me today. He's talking about it in terms of worry, but I'm thinking about it in terms of just sort of how, a little bit what Barbara said, like how we structure our lives differently right now. And we're not always even aware of what day of the week it is, right? That's why Shabbat is so great. It gives us an anchor point, even if we can't figure out from anything else what day of the week it is. So he writes, university professors post office hours. Lots of people post office hours. Mine were recently Tuesdays 3:15 to 4:15 and Fridays 1 to 2 p.m. Students know I'm available during these hours. If they cannot make one of these times, they must make an appointment. Faculty do not make themselves available all of the time because the door might be closed so that they can do other work. When it comes to our minds, though, do we give our thoughts 24/7 access? Do we worry all throughout the day and even in the middle of the night? Are we constantly on call to our mind? A benefit of mindfulness practice is developing cognitive boundaries akin to office hours. We don't have to give noisy thoughts unlimited free access to attention and consciousness. One tool that I teach people is scheduled worrying. Like office hours, a dedicated time is given to worrying fetching. During this time, you mindfully allow yourself to project into the future, mull over the past, write things down, problem solve, and dwell on fears and worry about outcomes. And then, when thoughts present themselves with urgency outside of this dedicated time, you can remind them with gentle firmness that office hours are at 3 p.m. and they'll be dealt with then. Mindfulness practice develops the skills required to set up inner office hours. So I just really like that idea, not just about worry, but we have the ability to control our thought experiences and when they can arise and when we can be present to them. So let's just sit for a moment, a little bit of practice, and
There were no appointments in the morning.
Let yourself
3:30.
Anchor yourself with breathing.
So we ought to be back by then.
With your breath. Just let it be. You might feel your upper body rise and fall, though your lungs are not, your lungs are pretty high, but they actually expand down. So allow some freedom around sort of the middle of your body for the breath to move in and out more freely. And just note if there are restrictions. And this kind of attention is just a warm up to just paying attention to first our inner physical experience. And then we can see what arises in our thoughts. You might want to allow to arise to see what is preventing you perhaps from feeling. Note the things that are getting in your way of feeling more present in this moment. You might notice if there's things that get in your way of feeling present in general. This is a time of year where we can look at that, see how we might want to make that different. What can we do? We can start by just being present now. And if your mind starts wandering to other sounds, things that happened yesterday, errands to take care of later.
Sorry.
See those distractions and allow yourself to come back into this breath in this moment. So I was thinking this week about our continued journey of these 7 weeks leading up to Rosh Hashanah. And the Sfirot each week, there's been a different, we've talked about this, these mystical aspects of God that we examine a different one. We sort of hold a different one each week as we are trying to elevate ourselves in holiness and think about what quality we could be cultivating and working on in ourselves in this journey. So this fourth sphira, this fourth emanation, divine emanation of God's self is called Netzach. Netzach means victory. I mean, there's lots of shades of victory. So it's victory like in, you know, winning a battle or a sports game. But la Netzach also has the implication for eternity, which is kind of an interesting overlay of words. So I think that we can also experience this quality of victory of, if we think of it in divine terms, as like this for a firmness for us, perhaps an inner victory over the things that trouble us, but as related to God's divine self, this sense of eternity, of standing firm, right? That's what victory is, to the last one standing, right? So this firm stance. So it's a little bit connected to when we talked about Yesod a couple of weeks ago, the idea of foundation. So there's these divine elements that spill out into the world. With the sense of eternity. Another really like kind of crazy, Hebrew's funny sometimes, like the overlays of words. So a minnatseach, also from the same word, is a conductor, both a train, an orchestra, a leader. We are minnatseach of ourselves, right, to conduct. And a lot of our psalms start la minnatseach for the conductor, and then for the conductor of the Levitical choir, and they go on with words of human expression. So God as Netzach, as this idea of victory and firmness and foundation and conductor of the world, if you will. When we would think about, okay, so again, like, you know, we're not God. What do we want? What are we as humans thinking about in this quality of Netzach? And so the Hasidim talk about this idea of what does it mean to conduct with the, conducting with a firm eternal stance. I'm not sure. That's how I'm extending it. But the Hasidim say that kind of experience is what we, for our human selves, cultivate the midah, the character value of bitachon, of trust, security. Right, bitachon in Hebrew is like the security guards. It's also insurance. Bituach Lumi is national insurance. So there's a trust. The idea of trusting in God, trusting to recognize that what is in our power and what is not in our power. Trusting to be able to overcome the obstacles that stand in the way of our being our best selves. The idea of trust is a challenging one to wrestle with because it does mean that at some place in ourselves, we have to recognize that not everything is in our own hands. And that's not easy. And while we even can see it a lot intellectually, and we can certainly see it in our day-to-day around us now, to really internalize that, like, what does that mean? And our ethical and moral and traditions of Musar and of how we behave, Judaism doesn't call us to abdicate our our personal actions and our personal responsibility in our lives. So bitachon is not an experience of it's all in God's hands, so I have to do nothing. But how do we live a life where we can recognize that there is something that isn't in our hands? Like there is what is in God's hands, and we have a partnership in that. Like there's a role that we play as well. And that's one of the many paradoxes that Judaism urges us to live in. The root of bitachon is to be sure, bituach, to be certain. Right? That's what trust is. In a sense, is an inner certainty. It's not based on fact or science, but an inner experience of having, of knowing something more deeply, of having trust in God, in what, however we believe in that something that is bigger than us in the universe. Now, when we talk about midot in Musar, these measures of character, we're always thinking about, and this is important for a practice of mindfulness, of thinking about these qualities, that we're never looking to just embody, like you either have trust or you don't. They're not all or none propositions. In fact, they're like along continuums. Like how do we know ourselves enough to know what qualities we need to cultivate? How do we become in balance? As opposed to having something, we think about these qualities as sort of being in the middle of a continuum where we want to find balance. And each of us gets to locate that quality along the continuum of our own soul. And knowing what's right for us. For some people live with an unshakable foundation, an unshakable belief in God's being in God's hands, God's goodness and protection in their life. Some of us, you know, worry more, doubt more. There's not right or wrong. It's just finding where the balance is for each of us ourselves, because extremes throw us off balance, and not just in trust, but in our lives, right? So thinking about how we would cultivate an experience of deep trust, it's not about how much we believe in God, but how do we find something deeper in ourselves? How do we pay attention to something deeper in ourselves that balances our own actions, not passivity, with knowing that there is a piece of life that is out of our hands, but that it's not just falling off a cliff, that there's something bigger than us that could also hold us when we need. So this kind of soul work calls on us to remind us that we're ultimately not in control, but where do we have to act, and how can we work to try and find and experience that balance, and not just feel like, okay, so I only can control this and the rest of it is out of my control, but rather, here are the things that I can act. These are the ways I can make effort and act in my life, and these are the things that, again, however you believe, God holds, the universe holds. It's not about plan. It's just that there's something bigger than us, and it anchors us rather than has us feeling like we're alone. Does that make sense? It's hard. It's hard. It's challenging. And yet there's if we can wrestle with that idea, if we can consider it and struggle with it, we might find that netzach, that eternity, that sense of a victory of ourselves, of what we can accomplish, because we're not only worrying about what we can't do. So, because this is not easy, I would like us to sit again for a few minutes. I'm gonna put a few reflection ideas with the understanding that nothing may come up for you and you can't, and there's no judging of what does or doesn't come up. There's just a noticing of sort of what kinds of thoughts and feelings arise as I ask these things. And, you know, if your attention starts to wander, you don't want to, I don't want us to feel grasping at what I'm asking. I also want us to get a sense of being able to practice like my attention wanders, or noticing like these questions are bringing up feelings of anxiety or difficulty or tension in my body. It's all about just, it's the paying attention. It's the paying attention, not so much that we come up with answers, but the questions allow us to pay attention to what happens when our soul tries to answer and or gets distracted. So again, sitting uncomfortably is not great, but if you want to sit uncomfortably, or just if you're not comfortable, just sort of notice and be with that discomfort. If you want to try and shift a little bit, if you want to lean into the support of the chair or the couch or the floor, bench, wherever you are. And to notice, where would you put yourself on the continuum of trust and control? Sort of see where you notice yourself to be. And don't judge it. Don't try to change it. And try to fix it. Because often when we give our attention to things, just attending to them causes shifts. We shed light. We lift thoughts and ideas up. And that already brings change. And as you sit with where you are on that continuum, notice what impact that has on you, on those around you. A feeling might arise, a situation you might notice. Just to be aware of how being where you are. You're striving for control, you're striving for bitachon, for a trust, a release perhaps. How does that ripple out from you? Perhaps consider an experience or a feeling or a time or a situation where you exerted too much control, you took too much credit for success or failure. What was that like? Without judgment, just being the curious observer of your experience. And perhaps what's come up instead is a time where you were at the other extreme of the continuum. An imbalance of trust, an excess of trust that might have thrown you off balance. Look at that experience, the feelings that came up. The thoughts that arose. Without judging how you got there. The purpose and experience of noticing that isn't to, it's almost like to be for ourselves the objective observer that we would be for someone else's experience. Often for ourselves, we overlay judgment and worry and anxiety even as we are reviewing ourselves. We're doing now this cheshbon hanefesh, the accounting of our soul in these weeks leading up to Rosh Hashanah. And if we really want to shift who we are, think about the compassion that you would bring to a beloved family member or friend if they came and bared their soul to you and told you of the things that they were sorry for and the things that they did wrong and the things that they wanted to make amends and the advice and compassion that you would hold their errors with. Because then that you know that when you do that with someone, that gives them the opportunity to let go of judging themselves, right? Of feeling bad, because our feeling bad gets in the way of our actually doing something about it. And so then they could take the appropriate actions and changes and things that they need. So our own mindfulness kind of practice allows us to do that with ourselves. It's much harder if we berate ourselves, it's harder to then get past what we've done to try and repair it. But when we can look at the things that we've done, the ways that we have been, that we want to change with an objective, compassionate heart for ourselves, we then have an ability to make a change without being bogged down by guilt and blame, which we may be guilty and be the cause of blame, but that doesn't help us then change anything. So thinking about where we control and how we trust is, in a sense, allowing God to hold us, allowing us to hold ourselves without blaming, and allowing a space to be held, not without, not to let us off the hook, but just to allow us to let go of the overlays that get in our way of then doing teshuva, of making the changes that we want to in ourselves, that we can see them clearly without the lenses of guilt, and we can do something about them. There's a text from Jeremiah, Prophet Jeremiah, chapter 17. It talks about trust. So Jeremiah writes, "Cursed is the person who trusts solely in people and makes his flesh his source of strength and turns away from God. He will be like a tree in the desert and will not see when good comes. That person will inhabit the parched places of the desert, a salty, uninhabited land. Blessed is the person who trusts in God and whose hope is God. For that person shall be like a tree planted by the waters that spreads out its roots by the river and shall not see when the heat comes, but its leaf shall be green and shall not be anxious in the year of drought, nor shall it cease from yielding fruit." It's a lovely image of trust, because the tree is still made to do what it's going to do, but there's also circumstances, sources around it that allow it either to flourish if it is in the right, if it's in the right circumstance, or will be in a parched desert, uninhabited land, no fruit. And Jeremiah likens that to a person, right? So the experience of trust is our being like the tree, right? And it's a great overlay of water. Water is a source of well-being, right? Water is a source of nourishment, right? So a tree with roots by the water is always connected to a source of life and vitality. Now the tree grows where it grows, but we can put ourselves in the desert or near the river. That's the experience of trust. Can we draw upon the source of life and vitality, right? Bad things may happen. Droughts happen, heat happens, pandemics happen. But because of a source of connection, the tree is connected to the source of life that keeps it creating and producing fruit, right? Even because of what it draws upon. So that's what Jeremiah describes as a person who has trust, right? The experience of trust. Yeah.
Where is that quote from?
Jeremiah chapter 17.
17. Okay, thanks.
Verses 17 and 18. Having trust, having bitachon, doesn't mean bad things won't happen. There'll be famine and drought. But the tree, the nearer it is, the more it can work to draw its water, will still be able to survive. And the person with bitachon, Jeremiah says, won't get confused by suffering. They'll be able to stay life affirming and generate that for themselves and for others. So it's not just the circumstances around, but where you draw from. So being able to draw upon something greater than ourselves helps us weather the storms. It's not that the storms come because we don't have it. They come no matter what. And so that is cultivating an experience or a stance of trust in something beyond ourselves can actually help us weather the difficult times and support us as we're doing this work of taking the accounting of our soul. So it helps us to hold us. It helps to hold us. It helps us not to just be mired in dust and in mud and in the things that get in the way of us growing and flourishing. Does that make I don't know. Is that as clear as mud?
No, it makes some sense.
So, to leave us with a place, a direction of kavana, of intention, to not only sit with where we have been troubled, where we have perhaps been at extremes of control or trying to, like, not finding ourselves in the middle. I wanted to sit with one more thing, because this idea of trust is really, for me, underlying it is an experience of our partnership with God in this world. It's not all in our hands. It's not just in God's hands. We have to act, and there's things that are beyond us. Like, for me, that is the experience of trust. And when we can cultivate that in moments that are less challenging, we can draw upon it in the moments that are more challenging. But the idea that we are partners then in creation with God in making how our lives unfold, not what happens to us, but how we act in our lives. I wanted to sit with this idea of creation and rejuvenation and the water and the image of Jeremiah to think about how we set ourselves up for doing this inner work. Like, where do we find moments of creation, of helping someone, of creating something, some moment that was a sense of renewal and rejuvenation. So I thought we would finish with a few moments of sitting to think, to let arise, you know, what are those things that give us a sense, give each of you a sense of renewal and rejuvenation? What helps stay connected to that? What makes it difficult to stay connected to that? So we can begin to elevate more a sense of sacred in these days and weeks ahead. So taking this experience of a balance of trust and control, of an experience of bitachon, of finding where we can hold in our lives, what is beyond our control, and how we find a measure of where the actions that we take bring creation and beauty and rejuvenation, that we can draw upon the waters that that bring us renewal. So a number of things to allow to arise, again, without sort of judging and saying, oh, this is good and that is bad, and just sort of see what comes up for you and be with that. And if you get distracted beyond that, to recognize that we get distracted, and sort of just bring your attention back to those kinds of thoughts and experiences and be with those. So I'll sit for a few more minutes. I hope that you will be able to take into Shabbat tomorrow, into the week ahead, some of this experience, this ongoing work in yourself, the things that we are offering through the synagogue, that you mindfully choose how you are preparing yourself for these holy days. No judgment, just that you do it mindfully. With choice. That's all we've got, is our choice. Any thoughts or questions? Okay. Well, it's lovely to see you all.
Good to see you.
Yes.
I hope you get Thank outside. You.
Susan, nice do you have time? I just want to discuss something else. I just had something else I wanted to discuss after this. Is that,
are you okay? I have a meeting in 5 minutes.
Okay.
So I don't want to shortchange you. Can you send me a note and we'll make a time? Is it urgent? Okay. Is it today?
Yeah, it would help.
Okay.
Or tomorrow.
Okay. Send me a note and we'll make some time later or in the morning.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Good to see everybody.
Yes,
likewise.